Welcome to Reinventing Nerds. Dr. Joni Cannell shares communication strategies for technical people. She shares her own stories of learning to communicate and brings in other nerds and experts to show you how to interact with people in a way that's comfortable for you. And now, here's your host, the uniquely qualified engineer turned psychologist, Dr. Joni Cannell.
Hello and welcome to Reinventing Nerds. Today we have Sanjeev Prabhakaran. He is a senior executive and entrepreneur with over 30 years experience in software development, management, technical architecture, in mobile and web applications, just for so many different types of applications and industries. But in early 2002, he founded Bytes Inc., which provides low-cost and rapid software outsourcing and project management services. But in addition to Sanjeev's impressive career in tech and leadership, he's also a philanthropic role model. And I think it's really important for us all to listen in and to what he has to say about how he makes a difference. And we have a lot to learn. So we'll get to that toward the end of the episode. But first, I want to welcome Sanjeev. Welcome, Sanjeev, to the episode.
Thank you, Joni. Appreciate that. It should be a fun session. I always look forward to speaking with you. So that's good.
Oh, good. I'm so honored to have you as a guest today. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule for both all of your hard work and philanthropy. So let's get right to the point.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially after the holidays.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I want to start out with a little bit of nerd speak, I would guess. So you could talk to our audience here specifically and tell us, in your own words, what you do at Bytes Inc.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Bytes, it's kind of like I wear multiple hats, Joni. You know, my primary role is developing the business side of that. But I end up, you know, entering into the marketing role, the sales role, you know, many times the project management role of dealing with the clients. You know, and that's, so it's a mixed set of things that I do at Bytes, and it's a fun, challenging and exciting thing for the past, 17 years.
17 years, and it sounds like you have your hands in a variety of areas there. You're the CEO. Right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
I
mean, the core, you know, way to explain what Bytes does is just, you know, bringing up a simple example of what we do, if that helps. I mean, a good example is a project that we did for a custom tailor, which was pretty interesting because what these guys typically do is go to a big warehouse where there are a bunch of recruits that come in from the military base. This is down in Point Loma. And mm-hmm. they had to take measurements of all of these candidates. And they would walk in with a big, you know, 3x4 sheet of paper, collect all the, you know, information that they need. And it's usually a 1 hour session that they collect all that. But it's things that happen after that that takes a long, long time. And generally, they found that it takes almost 5 to 6 weeks before the tailor can send an invoice. So we ended up, you know, we looked at that operation, we saw how that workflow could be improved. And that's what we do at Bytes, is really figuring out a way to save time. And we built a mobile app for them that saved them almost 15 hours of labor each week. So that's a typical example of what we do at Bytes.
Oh, that could save them a lot of money too. 15 hours a week on so many people, you said, coming through the military, that would be a lot of clients. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, because they do about 5,000 alterations every week. So
wow.
You can imagine the amount of manual labor that goes through that. And by the way, we could provide a nice, interesting, and kind of motivating app for them, which the people who took the measurements were so excited when they saw the tablet that all they had to do was punch buttons instead of manually writing down all that information. So that's saved them a lot of time, but at the same time motivated the whole team, which was pretty interesting.
Huh. So how does it motivate the whole team as well? That's really interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, if you think about it, previously they would walk in with this big 3x4 sheet of paper, and one person would have to write down all the measurements. Another person, you know, who is taking the measurements has to mark the dresses with chalk and ruler. But it's the person who's taking the measurement that spent the most time, because they have to call out each person, look at the candidate, and jot down, you know, find the name, jot down the measurements. And by changing all that into a process where you just pull up the name on a tablet and just punch a few buttons to collect that information, they save just the time in collecting that information, which was typically took them almost an hour to 2 hours, down to like 30 minutes. So it kind of helped them to increase production, so it's an overall increase in motivation.
Right. And it'd be more the more interesting aspect of the work rather than just data entry.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. It made it more fun for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, meaningful work is what it's all about today. So getting something where people can focus on the actions as opposed to just entering in the information, I could see that could really motivate people. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, this tailor was, you know, it was kind of their primary business, and they were locked in there for almost 50 years as a family business. But 7 years ago, the military came and said, you need to computerize this. Paperwork won't work anymore. So fortunately, they found us, and that's how the project started about 7 years ago. They still use it. We just launched a new update to their software for the last month. So it's an ongoing process, and that's kind of what is fun about it. It's a very interesting client, yeah.
Huh. That is interesting. Well, that's something that you've done recently, but you've had lots of leadership experiences before Bytes. And I would love for you to tell our listeners and viewers a little bit about that, you know, like more corporate, going up the ladder, what kinds of positions you had.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was pretty much spent a lot of my time in the Bay Area before 2000. I was about 14 years in the Bay Area, and I was working through at least, I would say, 3 or 4 companies where I started as a programmer writing code, and eventually kind of climbed up the ladder, became a manager, and led small teams in building these different kinds of systems that we were developing for our clients. So it was a different environment. You're working for somebody, and you're following some instructions and building stuff. But, you know, it was fun in those days. You know, it came a time where I was, you know, looking at opportunities to grow further and become more independent. And so in 2000, I found a nice opportunity here in San Diego. And that's how we came down. And this was essentially coming in as a VP of engineering and R&D for a small software company that actually dealt with real estate software. So it was pretty interesting to come into a company where, you know, it was kind of different from what I was doing before, but it was still all software. It was building technology and building tools that will help clients eventually, you know, improve their operations, improve, again, like motivation improves when you have some cool technology coming in. And that's kind of how it went from, you know, reaching that position of leading a whole team of 20, 30 engineers into developing cool stuff. So that's kind of the transition of or the path I went through, you know, reaching the way San Diego.
Well, you know, this show's all about the people side of this technical leadership. So I'm curious, you went from coding to managing teams.
Yeah.
What was that transition like?
That was pretty fun, you know, when you think about it. You know, you are, as a coder, as a programmer, you're working with a team, just listening to your bosses and following instructions. Obviously, you know, provide input based on your experience. But you always had a kind of a fixed goal, and, you know, you knew what you were, you know, trying to accomplish. But when you're getting into more responsible role, the biggest thing that you run across is team culture and how you integrate. You know, especially when you have you know, teams from different regions and different countries also, and how do you integrate that and have a meaningful you know, cohesive outcome at the end?
So how did you do this? Yeah,
it was fun. I mean, it was, you know, initially obviously running through a lot of stumbling blocks, But you gradually try to understand, you know, what the other end is trying to do or trying to say. Sometimes, you know, language can be interpreted in a different way. And so fortunately, I was dealing with teams from India, where I knew a little bit at the background of, you know, how to deal with those people. And you know, sometimes a nod is a shake and a shake is a nod.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That's a big difference. In India, you know, a lot of people, they don't nod like this. When they say yes, they kind of, you know, shake their head.
Oh, that is interesting.
It's a yes.
Okay.
So it is sometimes interesting to realize that. And other than that, there are a lot of other little nuances that you pick up when people say things. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, you find people are hesitant to say no to certain things when they don't mm-hmm. know how to do it. You know, they'll say yes, but you know, based on your experience that person is not really capable of doing it, but doesn't want to say that he cannot or she cannot do it. So understanding those kinds of differences and challenges, you know, it's a learning process. It takes time, and you know, you can definitely read some books or go through a culture class and kind of learn some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it did take some time to kind of figure those things out.
Right, and for the different cultures, I mean, luckily you had experience in both cultures, American and Indian, so you could. But maybe not all of your team members did, so you might have had to explain some of that or mediate. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was kind of sometimes a one-on-one conversation and helping people understand this is mm-hmm. what happened. And that's one way to kind of build the team spirit, to make sure that everybody has a single goal at the end, is to deliver, you know, whatever the project is, and trying to minimize friction between the team members.
Uh-huh.
So it took a lot of one-on-one sessions with either with a group of, you know, two or three individuals, or sometimes it's one-on-one with each individual.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it was a fun experience. Yeah, it was kind of, you know, helped me grow into a role where I started realizing, you know, that now I need to be aware of, you know, how to be patient with people, how to understand each other's, differences in how they communicate, and trying to build that team spirit, you know, as seamless manner as possible. So it was fun and challenging.
I love that you brought up patience. That's something that people don't often articulate mm-hmm. well, but that's exactly what people need is, to be able to listen, mm-hmm. to be able to persevere, to understand.
Correct.
And
correct.
Accept differences. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. All of those falls into that category. And, you know, my background has always been, you know, I grew up with that nature of, you know, being as patient as possible. And mm-hmm. so that helped that in that migration from a programmer to a leadership role, that definitely helped. The other, you know, things that really help is building that trust with the team member. That's mm-hmm. crucial. And also the discipline part, you know, how you can be, discipline, and at the same time helping the team understand, you know, how discipline helps with not only being on time for things to be delivered, but also being proactive and being quite open about things that cannot be accomplished, or sometimes you run into roadblocks, and making sure that everybody is comfortable in bringing that up. And so having that trust between team members is very crucial. And, you know, it's something you grow into, and you learn how to manage that process. And in that process, sometimes you find team members that may not fit into that team. So you mm-hmm. end up replacing those people or letting them get on to, you know, a better place where they fit in, and finding somebody else who can fit into our team. So that structure sometimes happens in the process. For sure.
Yeah, that's the hard part, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you spend so much time training, but the earlier you realize that, the better. So, mm-hmm. so you don't waste the entire team's time and jeopardize the project or a client's deliverable.
Well, that, I mean, it sounds like trying to make sure that you learn, after a while at least, you would learn what you're looking for in a team member when you're bringing them on board, so that you might have some kind of process for that too.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a key part of transitioning into that leadership role is trying to understand that those differences. Yeah.
So you talk about working directly with your teams, but you also worked as a VP of engineering. So you were probably working with you said it was a smaller company. Was it sort of similar kind of issues, or were you dealing with different things when you move up to that level?
Most of the things are very similar, but the additional thing that you run into is, internal politics, which happens pretty much in many companies that you go into, right? And how do you juggle that aspect where you're dealing with a VP of marketing or your CEO who needs certain things done, right? But how do you communicate that to them in a meaningful way where it doesn't jeopardize the team's deliverables or how the team performs? You know, because that is a critical thing, kind of like a delicate balance between the upper management and the rest of the team members. So that's something I learned along the way. You know, you go up it a few times and you ruffle some feathers there. That happens. But at the same time, it's believing in what can be done and what can be accomplished in a reasonable way, and letting upper management know that, you know, these are some of the hurdles that you run into. You know, we may be able to deliver something, but it might not be the perfect product. And so being aware of those kinds of challenges. So that's the delicate balance that I had to kind of learn and understand and, go through that whole scenario.
So did you have to learn it all the hard way, sort of like the school of hard knocks just as you go, or did you have any mentors or any like more formal training? How did you develop yourself?
Yeah, unfortunately, no, I didn't go through any formal training. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because you come into a role and it's always like things had to be done like yesterday.
Right.
So you're running crazy, getting things done. But I had a few mentors for sure that really guided and helped me in kind of going through that process. And especially the CEO that I had when I came to San Diego was very understanding. But at the same time, you know, I had to realize that he had investors on his back that were putting money into the company. So he had pressure on his end. But he was very understanding from the technology aspect, which was good. But he understood technology to a certain degree, and that helped. But that may not be the situation in many, many cases, right? I mean, CEOs generally are running around building the business and bringing money into the company and things like that, the rest of the team, whether it's marketing or sales or engineering, R&D, they have to really, you know, work together to figure that out. So that was one of the key things when I came into this company here, was really building that trust between the peers, like the VPs of marketing, VP of sales, and all those people, to kind of come together and understand and show them, you know, what really happened. So I would have sessions with our development team, trying to bring in the sales and the marketing people and say, hey, this is kind of what we go through and what, you know, so they see. At the same time, I go to their meetings to understand what is the challenge of theirs. So having that kind of structure definitely helps.
That makes a lot of sense. So it's not just managing your teams. You're really managing your peers too, and managing up with the politics and just your colleagues.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the best way to have a very cohesive team, and you know, being able to deliver what is promised, and not over promising and then failing on that.
Yeah,
so that is a tough challenge. Yeah, and it's a problem with most companies. You know, most especially startup companies. That's one of the biggest challenges that you run into.
Oh, so tell me more, because now I was just about to get to Bytes.
Yeah.
So you moved into that role now as leading the company.
Yes.
So yeah, what? How did that change what you had to do? And it sounds like you're doing everything. So yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So in some sense, it was a good transition. You learned a lot in the role as a VP, where you're almost like running your own company.
Okay.
A small division, right?
Yeah.
But there were a lot of other challenges. Because now, by starting Bytes, you're getting into the situation of P&L, profit and loss, things that you'd worry about, employees that you'd worry about, payroll, meaning payroll, and like, things like that that you'd worry about. So those things, I took some time off after I left the previous company, which actually kind of went belly up after the 9/11 situation. So that's kind of drove me into, thinking hard about starting something on my own. And it kind of took about 3 months to do some soul searching and figuring out if there's any other position that I could get into. But that time was pretty tough. After the 9/11, getting a new job was very difficult in those
days. Right.
And so that's kind of led me into starting Bytes. And I always, while working at this other company, was always thinking about, is there an opportunity to do something on my own? So one of the key things at that time was our kids were growing. They were kind of young, and I think one was in the middle school, the other one was getting into elementary, and so I wanted to see how I could spend more time with them.
Right.
And so that was another motivation factor in starting the company. And eventually, built up some courage and went through some planning process and talked to a few mentors that I knew and gave me some pointers. And I think April of 2002 is when we officially launched the service. And so we were basically, it was just myself at that time, and I had a part-time marketing person who was kind of a mentor for me also. The other part was the team was already established, because it kind of fell off from the previous company that went belly up.
Okay.
So I was already dealing with the technology team, a remote team that I was managing anyway. And they also were impacted by the shutdown of the company that I was working with. So we started talking and figured out, that we could potentially be a good partner, and there's a good synergy between both of them. And so I had the technology team available to do any kind of project that we wanted to do. So the Bytes team was essentially helping small to mid-sized companies figure out ways to save time in their operation and their workflow. That's the kind of focus of Bytes. And so we launched, and it was a slow first year. Was pretty slow. We had to kind of,
as expected.
Exactly. It took some time, and fortunately, one of the attorneys I was working with put me in touch with a company in Hollywood, and they had an interesting project, and that kind of launched our first major project. So it was fun. Yeah, that was a chiropractic clinic that was struggling with their day-to-day operations, with their day-to-day challenges. I think they had about, if I remember correctly, about 5 doctors that initially was working at that clinic, and they had built a homegrown system that was starting to choke up because they had grown from 5 doctors to 70 doctors. And so they were managing all of that with a small homegrown system. So it was a perfect project for us because we knew exactly what had to be done and how to scale up. And after some negotiations, it landed up as our first project. And I think we spent about 4 months to really give them a fantastic product that, previously they had reports that were taking almost 30 minutes to create a simple report. And with a new system that we built, within 20 seconds, they were able to get the same. There was a huge difference. And And that itself was a very interesting portfolio showcase for us.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, there's just one thing I want to comment on too, because the examples that you give are just so real. They're things that everyone can understand, you know, Taylor right. and chiropractors and, you know, having to mm-hmm. put data and reports into the computers and all that. And it sounds like that must be some of what's so, what the talent at Bytes right. is really good at, is understanding this and being able to communicate and deal with customers in everyday kind of situations.
That is kind of what you put it in a perfect way. You know, that's kind of the secret sauce that we have. It's really, our primary goal is how can we save time? But that is essentially evolving from, you know, what is the day-to-day workflow at a company? What is their operation? How can we fine-tune that? You know, there are a lot of companies, like these examples I gave you, like this Taylor Real Estate Appraiser, you know, which is another nice project we right. have. Think about these people. They there are companies that are still using paper and, you know, Excel sheets and, you know, rudimentary method to do their job. Just they haven't really given thought to, you know, what can be done to improve it. So spending, you know, half an hour with some of these people opens up their eyes into, you know, you're walking around with a supercomputer in your hand. You know, how can we utilize that? You know, how can you bring efficiency into the whole operation? And that's what we end up doing, is just spending a few minutes opens up thoughts and ideas, and we put together a nice system that is economical and cost effective, and pretty much, you know, would pays off in maybe in the first 6 months of what it does. Because, you know, if you think about the amount of productive time that a employee in the company spends, if you can save half an hour of every day, 10 employees, that's 5 hours a day. It's 40 hours a week that the company is saving. And if you can put that to more productive use, that's kind of what, you know, simple web applications and mobile apps can do. And that's kind of what we leverage with the team and technology.
Interesting. Well, Sanjeev, I promised our listeners that we would get to your philanthropic efforts too. So let's turn to that. I mean, where we actually met was through the Del Mar Rotary Club. And I know you've been involved with them for quite some time and leadership roles. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about what you do with Rotary.
Sure, absolutely. You know, that was, I think our members really enjoyed your talk, and it was really good to hear that. And you know, that's, you know, it's a very interesting story how I got into the Rotary Club. Is about 6 years ago or 7 years ago, I started getting this feeling that I need to be more involved with the community, and I started looking for different kinds of opportunities. I think I spent some time with the San Diego Food Bank. I spent some time with the San Diego Food Futures Foundation, which helps, you know, kids from getting them technical skills and mentoring them and helping them through their college life and getting them into better jobs, things like that. So those were pretty interesting thing, but somehow it didn't create the synergy that I wanted, and eventually bumped into this Rotary Club through a friend of mine, and I attended a few clubs, and finally found that the Del Mar Solana Beach Club was the ideal fit for me from a lot of perspective. It was a smaller club, much better engaged. They were small but mighty club, because they had projects that were amazing projects that they were doing, and that's kind of how I ended up, you know, joining that club. About, I think it was September of 2015 that I joined the club, and I went through different roles there, but primarily been helping them with their, you know, the key skill that I have, which is internet. You know, so helping them as the internet chair. With a lot of things that spreading the word and increasing their membership. Those are the kinds of things that I help the club with. And plus, their major event every year is a big bocce ball fundraising event, which now is combined with a beer fest. So it makes it more interesting.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, so last, I think this is the second year we had the what is now called the Bocce Fest. So it's a combination of bocce ball competition. And mind you, it's very fierce competition that goes on there.
You bring out the competitiveness around, yeah.
Yeah, it brings it out. And so this September, we had about 300 plus people who attended. And
wow.
And it's a pretty nice event. Every September we have that. So hopefully next year you can make it, and probably you'll spread the word further and get more people in there.
Well, I'm going to start training.
You get local breweries come in. We had about 12 breweries this time that came and shared their beers. It was really nice.
Huh.
So that was the biggest attraction, is the various projects that they do.
Yeah.
Another group that I'm very passionate about is the Bianca, which is Be Involved Act Now Champion Autism project. Uh-huh. They focus on autistic kids and how to enhance their lives and how to improve bringing technology or whatever is required to kind of improve their lives. And recently I heard UCSD there's a guy there, a professor there, who's doing some research in coming very close to a cure for autism. So that's very encouraging.
Wow.
So Bianca is trying to raise funds to help support that also, and various other programs. So those are, I would say, two of my favorite ones right now.
So yeah. This is so interesting, though, because, I mean, just in terms of our audience here, some of what you contribute is your skill that you have in programming or whatever on the internet, knowing that. But also, I would say, leadership, right? Since you've been doing this, you're helping to run things as well. So you have a lot to offer.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what the whole thing about philanthropy or volunteer work is, you know, bring your skills, what you can, and help that club grow or the organization grow and spread the word, right? I mean, that's kind of what I find is interesting about some of these groups. They really help you to, I mean, they really help in synergizing with the individual quite well. And so you've got to find that. Each person has to find it. And it doesn't, you know, you may have to try a few things, and like I did a few things, and eventually landed on these two that really, jive with my goals and my passion.
So if people are thinking about getting involved in the community, you're saying shop around a little bit and see where there's the right fit for your skills and interests and just the right group as well. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, that makes a big difference. Yeah.
Well, this has been really interesting. If people want to get in touch with you after the show, Sanjeev, how would they do that?
So our website is the best way, which is bytesinc.com, bytesinc.com. Email, we can put it out on your podcast, but it's basically Sanjeev, my first name, Sanjiv, @bytesinc.com. And phone number is 888-988 and then bytes, BYTES. You can reach me directly. Anybody can reach me at 619-933-3366.
Well, that's courageous to put your direct line out there for people to get in touch with you. I love it, because that means that you really are open to talking to folks.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people can easily find me on LinkedIn. So that's mm-hmm. another way I communicate and reach out to people. So that's really, it's always fun to talk to people. And that's one of the key things we do is, in any project, we talk to people. We spend a few hours pro bono trying to understand what's involved before we jump into a proposal.
Right. Well, that sounds good. And people might also have some questions about bocce ball too. No, I'm just
Absolutely,
kidding.
Yeah. I would definitely like to promote that for sure. Yeah.
Well, our time has flown by. So Sanjeev, thank you so much for being a guest on Reinventing Nerds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to add at the end that, for anybody who's interested, especially nonprofits, we offer a 20% discount on
good
pricing. So that is quite important for people to know that, we do care and appreciate all the organizations that do a lot of work for the general public.
I'm really glad to hear that. And that's nonprofits call Bytes and get a great productive increase at a discount. So there we are.
Absolutely. Thank you, Junie. That's really good.
Well, thank you. And thanks to our listeners and our viewers. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. We're here at reinventingnerds.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Reinventing Nerds and encourage you to apply what you learned to help you communicate better. For a free consultation with Joni to see how she can help you further, please visit reinventingnerds.com. Until then, embrace your inner nerd and remain true to yourself while you develop your communication strategies.